Coming up in This Week in Computer Hardware, Qualcomm Extreme. Let's talk about the 8CX CPU for Windows, the Snapdragon 855, and oh yeah, 5G. NVIDIA's DXR ray tracing versus frame rates, the Titan RTX 4K TVs for your desktop monitor, and so much more. It's all coming up next on Twitch.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
This is Twitch, This Week in Computer Hardware, episode 494, recorded on December 6, 2018. Qualcomm Extreme. This episode of This Week in Computer Hardware is brought to you by ExpressVPN. Protect your online activity today for 3 extra months free with a 1-year package. Go to expressvpn.com/twitch. And by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Introducing Rate Shield Approval. If you are in the market to buy a home, Rate Shield Approval locks up your rate for up to 90 days while you shop. It's a real game changer. Learn more and get started at rocketmortgage.com/twit. And by Casper, a sleep brand that continues to revolutionize its line of products to create an exceptionally comfortable sleep experience one night at a time. You can save $50 towards select mattresses by visiting casper.com/twitch and using the promo code TWICH at checkout. Welcome to Twitch, This Week in Computer Hardware, Twitch weekly show that aims to bring you the most engaging, most delightful, most affordable, most expensive, most crazed, most practical. Well, we talk about hardware. We will be talking today about Snapdragon processors, $2,500 NVIDIA GPUs, 4K TVs that are bargains if you're looking for a better desktop monitor. And, of course, rumorage, including Ryzen 3, 5, and 7 rumors. But joining me right now, the man, the myth, the storage legend, Alan Malventano.
Hi.
From BZ Purr. It's a random opening day here at Sears.
Yeah. It's random closing day for many Sears.
Yeah. Well, if you've been working at Sears and are no longer working at Sears, you have our thoughts and sympathies go with you. No thoughts or sympathies, I think, from Qualcomm as far as pushing bigger, better, faster, more CPUs into bigger, better, faster, more expensive or mid-priced or cheap phones. They just want to sell all the CPUs. Snapdragon 855, probably the biggest hardware announcement this week, along with, of course, the Snapdragon X55G modem.
Yeah, 5G, about, baby.
5G is going to change everything if it works half as good as they say it's going to be. But that's a conversation for another day. Qualcomm is a sponsor at Twitch. So they're saying basically 855 is going to be the first product to support, you know, the faster LTE networks, true 5G NR millimeter wave, and sub 6 gigahertz radio technology. I'm really curious. Because at this point, 5G is much more interesting to me than a faster processor. I am still kind of like, you know, reading to try to deeply understand
like how it works.
Well, yeah, it's not so much. I've done a lot of research recently to understand how it works and how it should works. I don't want to get kind of bogged down in 5G because it's just such a deep subject at this point. I am more curious as to what is going on, not just with 5G, but I think what drives me nuts right now is we keep getting faster and faster phones that we may or may not actually be able to do anything with because whether or not there's any use for that power, .. But watching the claims of sort of AI support and how AI is sort of, what AI actually means in the context of a smartphone. Because most of the things you can actually kind of digest that the AI is doing is around photography and stuff. But 5G is talking about 12 cities this year, 19 cities by early 2019. Sprint says they're going to have it in 9 markets. T-Mobile's going to have it in, quote, 6 of the top 10 markets and hundreds of cities across the U.S. In 2018. I'm not sure if that's actually happening. Verizon 5G They're playing around with their sort of ISP replacements. But of course, they're going to turn on their 5G in quotes early 2019 and expand rapidly. You know, Samsung's going to have their first 5G enabled smartphone in the first half of 2019. You know, they've got their new AI engine in the 855. They're claiming three times the performance of Snapdragon 845 in certain AI workloads. And this was interesting, right? They're doing signal processing in the Snapdragon 855. You know, and the ISP is they call it advanced computer vision techniques. I'm going to actually be quoting some of the stuff that Ken put together on PC Per, and directly on the ISP without having to use traditional CPU or GPU resources. Quote, bringing massive power savings to operations such as object detection and background replacement. So,
So it's able to do that smooth bokeh style background.
Right.
The thing you're used to seeing on like iPhones today where it can just have this effect, right? Sometimes it does it with two cameras, but sometimes it can do it with just single camera. Like the more recent iPhones can do it with just the front facing camera front facing camera as an example. But this part of this hardware can do that effect at 60 frames per second video and in HDR, meaning it's probably double exposing each frame. So it's probably handling 120 frames per second at 4K and also doing this background bokeh and all this other, you know, kind of things all on the fly and all without the assistance of the CPU. It's just dedicated hardware that's able to handle that sort of a thing. That's pretty cool. I hope it works in practice more than it looks like it does on paper. But it's definitely cool.
It's definitely cool.
They're also doing a slightly different layout for how they handle like their big little cores, right? So what you used to have before was four big, four little. You just had, you know, four cores that could do like kind of heavy duty workloads and whatnot. And then you had four more power efficient cores. Maybe they couldn't do as much. And if you got an instruction came along that was more complicated, it would have to fire up one of the big cores to do it. But now they're kind of extending on that, and they call it the prime core. This is in one of the parts here where one of the cores is able to go to a significantly higher clock than the other three big cores. So the idea is, okay, we're doing something that's single threaded. It's able to go to 2.8 gigahertz instead of 2.4 gigahertz on that one specific prime core that has a higher clock. Because a lot of workloads today are still single threaded. So if you're able to just plow through those as fast as possible, you know, presumably they would do some other optimizations to the silicon on just that one core. Maybe it cost them a little bit more to do that, or there's some trade-off or whatnot. But the idea is just, you know, have the best straight line speed you can for the specific tasks that would benefit from that sort of a thing. So, and this is probably a catch-up play because currently Apple's, you know, iPhone and iPad CPUs are taking the cake right now on single-threaded, just raw straight line speed. So that leaves everybody else to figure out, okay, well, we have to do something. We have to make our single threaded performance faster somehow. And this is one of those answers. So good on them for coming up with that. And you know, these sort of advances we need to see out of everybody, because it's just the thing that pushes all of the things forward. Now maybe at some point it will turn into more of a power efficiency thing instead of having a Cray supercomputer in your pocket. But, you know, you got to start somewhere, I guess.
You got to start somewhere. Yeah, it's, you know what? We'll just segue while we're talking about starting somewhere.
What if you just scale this mobile stuff up high enough to where you could just stick it in a laptop and call it a day?
There's the segue I was looking for. Qualcomm Extreme!
Race fans.
Actually, let me point out that Extreme is actually apparently what the Qualcomm PR folks are pushing. And what I'm talking about here is the Snapdragon 8CX, which is the first Windows laptop dedicated processor, or the first, you know, Qualcomm processor that was actually built from the ground up, I believe, for Windows laptops. It is the biggest processor Qualcomm's ever made. They are claiming it is the most powerful CPU and GPU they've ever made. It is the first 7-nanometer processor, Qualcomm says, or when it ships, it will be the first 7-nanometer processor, quote, for a Windows platform, unquote. It actually has support for up to 16 gigabytes of DDR4 RAM and NVMe drives, which means one of the traditional complaints about having ARM-based Windows laptops, i.e. the minimal memory and the questionable storage speed, is effectively eliminated, you know, because I assume they're going to engineer these things properly. I like what they told The Verge. Qualcomm essentially told The Verge, quote, it's a real PC that can do real multitasking and productivity. They also had some pretty amazing claims that they were pushing, that the 15-watt U-series Intel CPU, they were basically claiming that their 7-watt part, Qualcomm's 7-watt Snapdragon 8CX, was delivering the equivalent performance of a 15-watt U-series Intel CPU, or alternately that they were claiming that they were 50% faster than Intel's 7-watt Y-series processors. No information on how they came to those numbers, what benchmarks they used to get those results. I will say I'm very curious about this processor. I'm very curious where it will show up. There was several articles online where people were pointing out that... there was a Lenovo rep, but the Lenovo rep didn't promise to make one of these laptops.
It'll probably end up in a Lenovo laptop.
I'm sure it will. I mean, these things are probably going to end up all over the place. I do love the idea of Qualcomm's Quick Charge 4 Plus in a laptop. It's been really interesting to watch what's going on, right? Because we've seen so many, you know, kind of failures. I won't even get into the sort of dead-end Windows release a couple of years ago that was based around ARM platforms because, you know, you couldn't run your standard Windows devices on it. Then, of course, we have sort of the universal apps from Windows. And something I thought was kind of intent for me this week, we talked about it a lot on Tech Thing, was Intel's announcement of the Windows DCH drivers for Intel products. So the universal Windows platform drivers were the idea that you kind of have one driver to rule them all and in the darkness bind them. So it was interesting to look at that. And then part of that is the Intel Driver and Support Assistant, which I am particularly enthused about because I have spent an embarrassing amount of time over the years trying to find drivers to update either motherboards or laptops that weren't being particularly well supported by the manufacturer. Although some interesting things happened when I ran the Intel Driver and Support Assistant on a laptop that is definitely covered with what should be an upgrade to the new Windows modern drivers. But I'm very curious to see because, you know, this is kind of, Windows, Microsoft is really pushing to open up Windows in the sense that they want to make sure all of the apps and all of the drivers work on all of the product categories. And I think that probably bodes well for the success of that Snapdragon 8CX. If it really does, if it is indistinguishable from an Intel part and delivers equal or better performance for the same amount of money, then I think it's going to be a really interesting year for Intel next year. So we wait with bated breath. Oh my goodness. ExpressVPN people, if you spend quality time traveling, if you suffer the horrors of using the Wi-Fi at a coffee shop or a hotel, or as I'm thinking about CES, McCarran Airport, you really, 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 really should be using a VPN. Virtual private network. Let me point out this episode of This Week Computer Hardware brought to you by ExpressVPN. If you're using public Wi-Fi, or if you just don't particularly feel like sharing what you're doing with your ISP, if you don't feel like being tracked, or if you're doing things that you think your ISP might object to, but you feel really comfortable with, this is a really good reason to use a VPN like ExpressVPN. I've been running it on my laptop for a few months. It's simple. It's designed to run seamlessly in the background of your computer, your phone, your tablet. And it does what a VPN does. It secures and anonymizes your internet browsing by encrypting your data and hiding your public IP address. The idea is you can safely surf on public Wi-Fi, no snooping, no having your data stolen, no having just using the internet quietly without being preyed upon. Rated the number one VPN service by TechRadar, comes with a 30-day money-back guarantee, costs less than $7 a month. You know, I've been running VPNs when I travel and actually at home quite a bit for years now. And, of course, you can do things like, you know, re-geolocate yourself. If you're a big fan of, for example, in my case, curling, and Canadian curling websites prevent non-Canadian IP addresses from browsing, you know, a VPN like ExpressVPN can make things possible for you. Protect your online activity today and find out how you can get 3 extra months free with a 1-year package at expressvpn.com/twitch. That's expressvpn.com/twitch for 3 extra months free with a 1-year package. Visit expressvpn.com/TWICH to learn more. And we want to thank ExpressVPN for their support of This Week in Computer Hardware. Oh, my goodness. How are you feeling about the Ryzen 3, big rumors again, plus the 5 and the 7, up on PC Per, Jeremy wrote, Ryzen 3000 chips will use Zen 2 cores and will follow Intel's edition of a 9 series. Though the quoted price of £400 for the Ryzen 9 3850X is a lot more attractive than Intel's pricing. That chip will support a 5.1 gigahertz peak clock on its pair of Zen 2 dies with 8 cores apiece, though the 135-watt TDP will need some taming. And Jeremy was looking at an article by Roland Moore Collier over at theinquirer.net. Big shock, Ryzen's pushing hard on Intel at all levels. And I'm really kind of curious how this ends up looking out. 3000 series processors, they're claiming up to 5.1 gigahertz, 16 cores, Zen 2 architecture. It's the follow-up to the Zen architecture that was found in the original Ryzen 1 and Ryzen 2. We're looking at probably 7-nanometer fabrication, which gives them a performance advantage. Adored TV is one of the places that sort of was propagating the original rumors. Their claims of Ryzen 7 3700, that's going to be sort of mainstream high-end processing. 12 cores, 24 threads across 2 Zen 2 dies. That's going to be like a 95-watt TDP on that part. And the 3700X, with a 105-watt TDP surging to 5 gigahertz. I'm super curious to see how this works out. I'm super curious to see the pricing on the Ryzen 3 3300 series. That Ryzen 9 3800 sounds super insane.
It does. Yeah. I mean, I would still take this with a little bit of a grain of salt because...
Yeah.
We don't know for sure that these are the final numbers or whatnot, but
right.
Even if they're close, Intel is going to need to make a quick turn there if they want to be able to keep up, because this looks to be like Ryzen really kind of putting the screws to Intel on their processor performance side. Yeah.
Yeah. And if you take a look, we talked about it recently. If you take a look at PC Per's leaderboard, unless things have changed in the last few days, I'm pretty sure it's still pretty much Ryzen processors all the way up from bottom to top. That said, a lot of people are still preferred or just that flat out, they just want an Intel processor. That's what they're comfortable with. That's what they're looking for. If you're looking to build a system and don't want to spend all the money for a Core i7 processor, HardOCP has a really cool look at the Core i5-9600K in terms of the overclocking potential of that machine. They attached an RX 480 V3 radiator, a D5 photon reservoir pump combo to cool the chip, and they were hitting 5.25 gigahertz, quote, perfectly stable with some noticeable results. And so, you know, that Core i5-9600K is like $270, which is pretty good. The stability was maybe not entirely what they wanted. They got handbrake stability, 5.1 gigahertz. They had some issues with Prime 95 stability. I think that maxed out at 5 gigahertz. And, 5.2 gigahertz, they had Premiere Pro stability. So no issues running games at 5.2 gigahertz on the 9600K. They weren't really crushing the voltage. They weren't doing any terrifying voltage pumps on that to get it done. It's kind of crazy, right? The Core i5-9600K will beat an 8600K at stock by a little bit. Overclocking is really attractive. There's a lot of information in that article because that's the way they roll at Hard OCP. And if you're thinking about buying an Intel part, or whether or not you need to upgrade your current Intel parts, and for some reason you don't want to go with an AMD, definitely check out the processor overclocking review up on Hard OCP, because there's a lot of overclocking can look. It's just there's moments where I'm just deep into overclocking again. I don't know how else to say it. So
I usually go through a phase of it every time I do some sort of a new build, but I always try to get it to the point where I can just be hands off and forget about it.
Yeah.
So I'm getting the extra performance. It's good enough to be stable and not to cause any weirdness. And then I just leave it be and don't touch it. Right.
Yeah. I want no excitement for my overclocking after the initial like, woo, I did this. And then I never want to think about it again. So. Mm-hmm.
And then you just completely take it for granted.
Speaking. Oh my goodness. Yeah, well, speaking of things you want to take for granted, never want to think about again, mortgages.
Ugh.
This episode of This Week in Computer Hardware brought to you by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Their goal is to get you through the process of getting a mortgage in the quickest, most efficient, and least emotionally traumatic way. I do a pretty cool, some pretty cool things about this, especially, maybe you're a little less worried about interest rates going up right now, but this is pretty slick. They call it the power buying process. And if you can answer a few questions, they'll check your credit for pre-qualified approval. They'll verify your income, your assets, your credit, less than 24 hours to give you a verified approval. The idea is they want you to have the strength of a cash buyer because, you know, if you're in one of the places in the United States where the market's hot, cash buyers, they have an advantage. And this will kind of, they want to make things easy for you over at Quicken Loans. And once you're verified, you get their all new exclusive Rate Shield approval. They'll lock your rate up for up to 90 days while you shop. If rates go up, your rate stays the same. If rates go down, they will drop your rate to match it. Either way, you win because your rate's not going to go up. And it might go down. It's kind of thinking you'd expect from America's largest mortgage lender. To get started, go to rocketmortgage.com/twit. Rate Shield approval is only valid on certain 30-year purchase transactions. Additional conditions or exclusion may apply based on Quicken Loans data in comparison to public data records. Equal housing lender licensed in all 50 states. NMLS consumeraccess.org number 3030. That's rocketmortgage.com/twit. And we thank Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans for their support of This Week in Computer Hardware. Oh man, tell me about the Titan RTX. This is a $2,500 GPU.
Well, remember Titan V was $3,000.
Well,
that was the one. And that was the predecessor.
So this is a bargain by comparison.
It was sort of, but really not meant to be a gaming GPU. So in case that wasn't mentioned for every previous Titan launch. Not meant to be a gaming GPU. If you're doing the kinds of things that this part excels at, which is depending on, you know, different precisions of math that it's able to just sort of crush, other GPUs at, other, you know, even gaming GPUs. And also if you are kind of a stickler and you want ECC on your memory to make sure to catch possible errors and whatnot, depending on if you're, you know, you just have a chunk of data that you need to make sure no random bit has flipped on you if your results are that critical, right? Yeah. Or also, trying to make sure I'm correct, but doesn't this thing have like 24 gig of? Yep, 24 gig of GDDR6, up from, I believe, 12 on the previous version of this card. So, you know, say you just needed more RAM for the workload you were doing. Interesting. We were commenting last night, actually, that it's almost like the gap is narrowing because you used to have like the Titans and, you know, the other cards that were just crazy pie in the sky price. Well, now these seem to kind of be coming down a little bit, but at the same time, the gaming GPUs, like the, you know, 2080 RTX cards, those are more expensive. So now they're kind of getting closer to each other. I don't know if that's that great necessarily. We really do hope that the gaming GPUs were a little bit more on the cost-effective side, but, you know, they're charging for those what they are, and I assume they're getting them. They're getting it because they're selling. But maybe they decided that they needed to come down a little bit on the Titan line. And there also was this thing just seemed to kind of pop up all over the place. Just like random YouTubers were just there must have been some sort of thing where NVIDIA was like, hey, we're gonna send you this. Just kinda covertly, just nonchalantly just stick it in the back of your video somewhere. So of course everybody just completely ran with that, and you saw Titan RTX is just showing up in all sorts of random places within people's videos. Maybe not so nonchalantly or not so covertly placed in their video. Anyway, if you're don't buy this if you're a gamer. Just don't.
That seems perfectly reasonable. Don't buy it for a gamer. No. You know, it's been interesting over the last couple of weeks to look at some of the reports, around Battlefield 5. They've got the patch in place for RTX. And something I didn't really expect to hear that I've read in several articles right now is, and I just put in a link, is another Hard OSP article, the GeForce RTX 2080 Gaming X Trio Review. I mention this because it's crazy how much the performance drops. There was a good title from Matthew Smith over at Digital Trends. He said playing Battlefield 5 on the $800 NVIDIA card is stunning and disappointing because it works incredibly well if you don't turn on the DXR ray tracing. And if you do turn the ray tracing on, you're probably going to have to drop your resolution down to like 1080p.
Ken and I were playing around with that. And we were getting in like the 50, 60 frames per second ranges with 4K and, you know, the RTX features turned on, and that was on a 2080 Ti, where the game was doing like something like double that with it disabled. But there's been updates recently, like they're improving the performance. Almost like they just turned it on and didn't really optimize it for performance, right? It was just, you just make this work, right? And imagine if you spent a little bit more time and care trying to kind of carve out some performance and still get the same benefit visually, but you should be able to do that and without that much of a performance hit. And that seems to be the case. I forget what the percentage gains were, but there was something like, 15, 20, something, on the order of that range, like of a gain back in performance when you had RTX enabled, at least in Battlefield 5. And I mean, I know it's kind of gimmicky in that there's a very small number of games where you can even use this feature. And it's only looking to be in the stuff that's coming down, later on, like launches to be that haven't happened yet. So it's very much a hurry up and wait sort of thing right now for this particular feature. But at the same time, it's probably not going to end up being just this massive performance hit also long term, right? When people are going to figure out how to optimize better for it, how to get the benefits of using that feature without just killing performance of whatever it is you're trying to run. You know, and I'm sure there's going to be improvements on either side. There's going to be improvements on the game developer side, figuring out how to, you know, squeeze more out of the hardware in that particular mode. And there'll probably be some other tweaks on just the NVIDIA side and driver development and whatnot.
I hear you, right? And we've seen incredible gains made through driver updates and through updates to the application. But I mean, to put this into context, right? So the RTX 2080, the Gaming X Trio that they were reviewing at HardOCP, 71.4 frames per second at 4K, you know, TA on high, ultra settings, you know, DX11, you know, which is not quite 20 frames per second faster than a GTX 1080 card. So that's a nice healthy bump right there. But when you turn on the ray tracing DXR performance, running at 1920 by 1080 TA high, with the DXR essentially on low, you're looking at 43.4 frames per second. You can pick it up to 54.5 frames per second. But remember, it's not just it's not just DXR. You're also dropping the resolution on the card down from 4K to 1080p. So from what I am hearing from people, it is an improvement, but it is not a spectacular improvement. So, you know, right. I agree that you can certainly do some incredible things with software updates and improving the game design, but this is going to, you know, this they're gonna have to do a lot of work. They've quartered the resolution and they've dropped the frame rate by, 25 frames per second. You know, that's a lot of hits to make up for that. I don't even think they can be. I hope to be proved wrong, but those would be some serious gains to make through driver updates and tweaks to the application or to the game, I should say.
It did seem to us just when we were playing around with Battlefield 5, it almost looked like it was even buggy in the implementation of like how you adjusted the amount of the ray tracing effect, because it was like a low, medium, high sort of a thing from memory serves, it was either three or four steps in that adjustment, and Ken and I were just like scrutinizing frames and like trying to, first of all, it's Battlefield 5, you can only play it in like a live multiplayer fashion, so we'd have to find some place on the map where could see what we wanted to see that would show differences in ray tracing, and also try not to get shot. So you know, it's like real life Battlefield benchmarking. So while we were in those states and we were kind of adjusting up and down, we noticed that in some cases, like if you had approached a particular setting from down below, it might have not changed. Like if you went from like medium to high, like it might be stuck in medium if you started from low, and you might be kind of stuck in medium. But if you started in like ultra and you went down to medium, it might be stuck or behaving like it did in the high mode. So it's kind of weird, you know, just kind of these kind of weird, like early sort of like simple kind of bugs that were throwing off some of our things, because we were measuring, we were looking at graphical effects and we were like measuring performance. And in some cases we saw like, wait, we just looked at that before and it was over here. What was different? Oh, wait, we started low in this one case and we started at ultra in this other case, even though we were in some point in the middle. So there's just these extra things that are complicating trying to get an accurate read on how Battlefield 5 specifically performs. But yeah, you're right. They're not going to be able to make it so that as if there was no ray tracing performance hit at all. There's going to be a hit. It's just, I imagine it's probably going to improve over time as far as how bad that hit is. Compared to the first game that supports it, that, you know, with the first version of the driver that has it implemented and everything, right?
True. I have a friend of mine who's always asked me, like, will you do a roundup of 4K televisions that you can use as a desktop monitor? And I don't have the space to put multiple 4K desktop, or it's just 4K television desktops in my house. But I loved an article that came up on TechSpot and recommended 4K TVs that can effectively be used as desktop PC monitors. It's a really nice write-up. And it follows up Sean Knight over at TechSpot had did a great article called Using 4K TV as Desktop PC Monitor, because he had done this transition a long time ago. They found a nice Samsung. It's kind of the updated version of the one he's been running on his own desktop for a while, the Samsung 40NU7100, which sells for under $400. And if you do decide to buy this, do the nice folks at TechSpot a favor and use the link on their page so they get a little something for the work they put in this. But they have like a 40-inch panel, a 55-inch TCL, which is really a fantastic television in terms of giving you 4K and HDR for not much money. And then definitely also check out Mr. Knight's earlier article, Using a 4K TV as a Desktop Monitor, because he points out some stuff you really need to look for. It's one of them, not surprising, get a 60-hertz monitor, because you will drive yourself insane using a 30-inch – or 30-hertz, not 30-inch, a 30-hertz panel. Chroma 444, he found uncompressed video to be critical if you didn't want things to look fuzzy or blurred, because you're not 8 or 10 or 15 feet away from this television. It's sitting on your desk, so – you know, you need 60 hertz, Chroma 444. Burn-in, he found, can be an issue if you leave windows open forever, more so than we find on they found on monitors. But a couple of really good articles if you're looking for a way to get massive resolution on your desktop to replace a collection of less smaller resolution monitors. It's a really good read, and I certainly enjoyed that one. So take some time. If you're thinking about buying a new monitor and you want a massive monitor, but some of the 4K prices on desktop monitors look a little prohibitive, that's an alternative that is definitely worth considering. So it's out there, people. There are bargains. It's not all just $2,500 GPUs and $850 CPUs. $2,500 or $850 GPUs, I should say. In any case, goodness, so many GPUs. I am so waiting for a sub 215 millimeter 20 series GPU to come out, but I am much less obsessed about it than I was a week ago. I just want to say that. Mm-hmm. This episode of This Week in Computer Hardware is brought to you by Casper. Casper is an online retailer, premium mattresses for a fraction of the cost. If you've ever gone shopping for a mattress, you probably felt like you were shopping for a used car, right? It's just a lot of unpleasantness involved in that. And that's why Casper sells their mattresses online, right? Premium mattresses for a fraction of the cost. Casper, their goal is simple. They want to revolutionize the mattress industry by cutting the cost of dealing with the resellers and the showrooms and pass the savings directly on to you. They call it an obsessively engineered mattress at a fair price. Right now, there's the legendary video of Leo unpacking the mattress. I believe we'll have the tremendous Leo leap coming momentarily. There it is, people. A mattress that can handle Leo in full flight. Long-lasting comfort and support. Supportive memory foam. The idea is that they have multiple foams to give you a sleep surface that works for the human body, just the right sink, just the right bounce. It's breathable, so you're going to keep cool and regulate your temperature better so you don't end up with hot spots or freezing or sweaty. It's the worst. You can buy it online easily, completely risk-free. I am down with buying mattresses online. They understand the importance of trying out a mattress. You know, you spend a third of your life sleeping if you're living in a healthy fashion. And Casper is going to give you a free delivery, 100-day tryout, right? Painless returns for 100 days. So you don't have to lie down in a showroom. You don't have to pretend you're sleeping. I mean, let's be honest. You get a really vague idea of how good a mattress is lying on it for 5 minutes in a showroom. Casper mattresses, they uphold the highest environmental production standards. They're made in the USA, free shipping and returns to the USA and Canada. You know, if you find mattress shopping to be a painful experience, you should give Casper a shot.
Give a Casper mattress today. You can save $50 towards select mattresses by going to casper.com/twitch and under the promo code TWICH at checkout. That's casper.com/twitch with the promo code twitch to save $50 on select mattresses. Terms and conditions apply. And we want to thank Casper for their support of This Week in Computer Hardware. Are you currently wearing a smartwatch, sir?
I am, but it is an older version of the one we're about to talk about.
Okay, so anybody out there has an Apple Watch 4, in theory, sometime today, the electrocardiogram feature will be available. And basically,
you'll have
the idea
is... update your watch.
Yeah, you can monitor your heart, people.
I do think it's really cool how it pulls this off with the whole, you know, measuring from one wrist all the way around to the other finger on the other hand, just through the watch. That's pretty cool.
Yeah, it's, I mean, this is, so Apple's app, this is the first time federal regulators have approved such a affordable item to do electrocardiograms. They did a preclinical study with 2,000 people. They did a clinical trial with like another 600 participants. And the idea was, can this watch, can the technology in an Apple Watch 4, can their app tell the difference between a normal heartbeat, sinus rhythm, and atrial fibrillation? There's a white paper out. They've got a physician-facing website. You know, the article you're looking at is a CNBC article where the host had been spending a week with the device. You know, this is kind of crazy, right? The latest software update can access a new feature to identify atrial fibrillation. And I am kind of fascinated by this. Just wanted everybody to know.
it's cool. It's cool stuff. You know, you're getting a decent amount of tech on your wrist. It's not just a simple accelerometer thing that tells you to work out more and stand up anymore.
You've only taken 74,000 steps today. So, speaking of 74,000 steps, I have built a mineral oil filled PC, which unfortunately it eventually died because mineral oil can penetrate components that are critical for the survival of the motherboard. But if you've been looking for the ultimate Raspberry Pi performance, head over to Hackaday.com. they have extreme Pi overclocking with mineral oil and a link to a video from Tim. And, you know, I think Tim was really frustrated that he couldn't, you know, build a small enough liquid cooler for a Raspberry Pi. So he ended up well submerging his Raspberry Pi in oil. And part of what makes this kind of fascinating, and they pick up on Hackaday, the GPIO, the USB, all the ports were desoldered from the board, and then there's a purpose-built header that they solder on, and then that way they can wire the routers out and terminate them so you don't have issues with the oil leaking into the system itself or the ports on the board. It's pretty slick and kind of completely out of control in the cheerful way that performance updates for computers can get if you just go for it.
Yeah.
It's something I completely agree with, but probably it's just not the best discussion. It's not the best educational experience, but Tom Cruise and Chris McQuarrie in preparation for the latest Mission Impossible movie, you know, it's up on like the... Well, this is, I don't think this is the original link, but it's crazy. Basically, they hate motion interpolation, which you might think of as the soap opera effect on televisions. And I should say motion
smoothing. I do hate motion interpolation. With a passion.
So it's a whole video.
That's coming from somebody who likes high refresh rate monitors.
Yeah.
But I do not like watching a film that was shot a specific way and something that's trying to turn it into something that's, you know, four times the frame rate.
Yeah, I mean, you have the right to watch your video anyway, your movie, because this is very specifically dealing with, you know, movies and running them on a desktop. You certainly have the rights, should you choose to, you know, to turn off all of the
you know, red pixels on your monitor, or to run it at twice the actual rate, or to turn on motion smoothing, or to turn on, you know, outdoor in Arizona in August mode, which is basically what televisions are set to from the factory, in case that television ends up in a wall at Costco with 22 other televisions.
Right. That's the thing. They come with the brightness just cranked. They usually come with the motion smoothing on in some form, usually very high type of a setting.
As the consumer, you can leave all those things on, or you can make Tom Cruise and Chris McQuarrie happy by not just going out and buying a ticket to the next Mission Impossible movie, but by making sure that you have motion smoothing turned off on your television at home.
Yep.
That AV Club article is actually that you're looking at right now. That's really fantastic. What is motion smoothing and why do all your favorite directors hate it? You know, and your favorite, you know, This Week in Computer Hardware hosts hate it. You know, you're basically talking about, inserting fake frames, guessing, you know, the processor in your television goes, I think this would be here if these frames were actually here.
Yeah, it causes other problems because, you know, when you shoot something on film or even if it's digitally shot, like it has a certain exposure time per frame,
right.
You know, that makes things blur a certain way when there's fast motion on the screen. And so if anything, they've had to make this like extra complex. So now you have modern televisions like 2018 model, like, you know, Samsung sets and whatnot. There'll be not just the motion smoothing setting, but then there'll also be something to try to get rid of the blur, because now you would have something that's blurred as if it was stretching or like moving this far within one frame, but you'd have that whole blur being redrawn multiple times, which really makes no sense. That's not how it actually looks when it's filmed in any possible way.
Right.
Like you can't even get that effect. Right. So now they have to add extra layers of settings and extra processing just to make it still look natural after doing all of this extra work to try to fill in the extra frames and try to make it look smoother. So it just baffles me. It's just like, look, just yes, I know you want it to look nice and slick and smooth and soap opera and all those things, but sometimes it's better just to go back to the basics and turn that stuff off and just look at it as it was shot. Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I should point out the original minute and 27 second video showed up at twitter.com/TomCruise, which is why I was having difficulty finding it elsewhere on the internet. You know, I also have to say that Swanee on TV probably had the best response ever. First time I've seen Tom Cruise stand next to someone with better hair. I also don't want to talk about the remake of Top Gun. Well, Top Gun 2.0. I'm terrified. In any case, oh my goodness. The madness, if you're thinking about CES, if you're thinking about announcements that are coming at CES, if you're curious about what's happening in the world of the Consumer Electronics Show, I will be heading there. And you can go ahead and tweet at Patrick Norton. If you have questions about storage or any other kind of hardware, do yourself a favor, tweet over at Malventano. Anything at PC Pro you can talk about right now, or things mostly under crazed NDA and people are keeping things secret till CES at this point?
I'm working on a couple of things that surprisingly I don't have to keep secret because there's no NDAs on. About a month or two back, I had gone to New York to be briefed by Samsung on some upcoming enterprise SSDs that were going to be like in the channel products that you could actually purchase if you were like a small business, as opposed to previous Samsung. For years now, Samsung enterprise parts have all been this big kind of cloaker and daggery. Like they would announce that they're a thing and they're better than everything else, but there's only, you know, whoever these mystery secret companies are that have access to those products. And those are the only guys that get them and nobody else can. And, you know, too bad, right? So it got to the point where, myself included, we were getting kind of jaded on all of these Samsung Enterprise launches. They would announce something, and we'd just kind of be like, you know, it was like the movie Clue, right? Once there's like the sixth or seventh murder, they just kind of like, they're numb to it and they just kind of like walk away. So that's kind of how it was becoming. Well, now it's great that they're supposed to be launching channel enterprise parts. So people that have enterprise workloads that they might be even running on their home workstation kind of system, they should be able to get their hands on these products. They should show up probably on like Amazon and Newegg and whatnot at some, you know, eventually. So I'm testing a round of those. There's SATA products, there's NVMe products. There's even that new ZSSD, which is supposed to be Samsung getting NAND memory to behave in the performance class as Intel's Optane crosspoint memory, which is impressive because NAND is not supposed to go that fast, at least as far as we understand, being storage people. So cool stuff there. The NDA has already passed, but I finally have samples I'm testing. I'm actually already started writing the review. And then you remember those DeepSpar guys?
Yeah.
Data recovery guys, right? And they made like this RapidSpar thing, which was kind of like a home version of, or a small mom and pop shop version of a data recovery device that kind of let you do most of the hardware style data recovery things.
Yeah.
They just came out with a thing that does the same via USB connected drives. So really? it's able to quickly reset and quickly push past a bad sector as opposed to waiting for the timeout before you retry it. Or in the case
Which
of Windows.
Takes a long time.
Oh yeah. Yeah. And in the case of Windows connected devices, sometimes depending on what the failures are, Windows will just say, I guess that USB thing just isn't plugged in anymore, and it just goes away. Right. Even though it was really just a hard drive in a dock with a bad sector, or just like a thumb drive that just had a bad page on it or something that just couldn't be read and timed out. Right. So they've made a piece of hardware that sits in the middle between the PC and the device. And it's able to do that same sort of magic that the RapidSpar could do, which is every time, you know, you can set a timeout and then only wait 3 seconds or only wait like 5 seconds or something. And if I don't get the read, then reset the device so that I can try to read the next thing. And the idea is you're just trying to image or do data recovery from that thing that, had some bad spot towards the beginning of the disk or flash. And it just prevented you from being able to access anything, right? Like say the boot sector or the sector that actually contains all the partitions, say that thing was having a hard time reading. This could hopefully like get you through that and then be able to access the rest of the data without the thing disappearing, right? So with any luck, probably on the next episode of this, we'll be able to talk about both in a little bit more detail. The testing show continues, and I'll just keep testing and the next things and the next things.
And the next thing and the next thing and the next thing.
Oh, my goodness.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, oh my goodness. I'm actually contemplating a 4K television as a desktop monitor right now, which means it's probably time for me to get back to testing a certain thing next to me that I can't talk about that may or may not show up on Tech Thing next week. But you'll have to head over to tekthing.com to find it. And as always, we want to thank each and every one of you for listening or watching this week in Computer Hardware. If this is your first show, welcome. Head over to twit.tv/TWICH to get information on how to subscribe, or just search for This Week in Computer Hardware on your favorite podcatching tool. We come out, we record this show every Thursday. So if you have something you want to ask us, do us a favor, tweet at Patrick Norton or at Malvin Tano on the Twitters. And we love having you here, and we appreciate you listening. With that, ladies and gentlemen, I'm Patrick Norton.
And I'm Alan Malvin Tano.
We'll catch you next week on Twitch.